In today's conversation, Canadian business owner conversation, we have Ed Peterson. It's great to have you with us, Ed Peterson. Welcome to the conversation.
Thanks, Rashid. Yes, so I am the founder and director of the Tiny Town Association. And Tiny Town Association is a federally incorporated not-for-profit who are working to develop affordable housing in the form of tiny home communities, initially here in Ontario, and eventually we want to see this happen across Canada.
That's great. And I for folks listening, Ed and I met at before at tiny home shows in Ancaster, in Hamilton. We had a chance to go over some of the great work that they have done, which we will go a bit and dive into it in some in this conversation series. The passion that Ed and his team has is to bring practical solutions to a real problem that most of us living in Canada now have, is the concept of how to have affordable housing, specifically in the modular and tiny home concept. So if you can tell us a bit more about the background of this movement that you've started, and what was it like at then and what is it like now? Like, if you can just give us a recap of back then to today.
Sure. Well, I started in this because I really saw a need for affordable housing. Having three kids that were growing up and looking to, move into get their first homes, I could see the difficulty they were having in trying to find something that they could afford, as well as just finding something available. I mean, both those are very high on the needs. So I had come across tiny homes a little while before this, and I was looking at it as a business opportunity. I'm an entrepreneur, have been in business of my own since '83, and a wide range of businesses. But anyway, I came across tiny homes, and I thought, oh, okay. First of all, I thought this would make a good next business for myself, tiny home manufacturing. But then I realized that the big obstacle was where people could live in tiny homes. And so even as I watched the industry kind of grow, I realized that where to live tiny was still the big obstacle as it is today. So I formed the association in 2017 with a focus first of advocating for tiny homes and tiny home communities. And now in 2017 or 2023, sorry, we're moving into developing tiny home communities. And interesting because when I started in 2017, when I talked to municipalities or cities or towns, nobody acknowledged the housing crisis at the time. It was kind of like if I brought up housing crisis or housing needs or everything, everybody's kind of went quiet, sort of heads went down, and nobody would talk afterwards. So in, the pandemic, I think really brought this issue to the forefront. And since 2020, everybody is talking about housing issues. Not that they're new, I mean they've been around for years and growing, but people are acknowledging that. And I think that's great because that's the first step in addressing an issue, is you have to acknowledge you have an issue. So we're there. So 2023 here has been just super exciting. A lot more is happening in the space, and I'm really expecting to see big things happening next year.
Yeah, that's amazing, and it is important to see the amount of work that you put in and the patience in coming all the along since 2017 till now, and in explaining the concept and helping different layers of government and authorities to put some light on this reality, and there's also the opportunity that the opportunities literally at our backyards. Literally, it's in the pockets of our neighborhoods. We don't need to go to the moon to find a solution for it.
Yes. And that's really a big thing is There's one of the things, of course, has been like, where do you put your tiny home community? And tiny home community is more of a challenge because we're looking at a number of homes on a property. But as far as creating more affordable housing, yes, like as you said, in your backyard, there's the opportunity there. I mean, there's a lot of people or homes with large lots that are underutilized, and a tiny home brought in as an ADU or a granny suite or a carriage house, they call it a bunch of different things, is a way of bringing more housing right in the center of a city or town. And that's really exciting.
It is, and we see that in the past few years, the construction side or the manufacturing side of homes for modular has also evolved, and it's becoming more streamlined and more accessible as well. What is your experience on that on comparing using modular or prefab built homes versus regular construction, which we know, especially since pandemic, especially as we speak in 2023, the cost of construction, labor shortage, and all those other factors has made it almost impossible to make affordable projects that happen.
Yes. Well, our traditional building system, is a one at a time system. I mean, unless you're talking about high density housing, apartments or condos, towers, where, and again, they're not fast either because they're big and complex. But for a traditional house, where it's built on site, it's a slow process because you're basically, building one, two or three houses in a neighborhood at a time. And first of all, you're faced with weather issues. Obviously, snow, wind, ice, everything slows down. Rain slows down construction on site. Your materials are affected by the temperature and the weather. So modular has that benefit of being able to produce year-round, 24/7 in a controlled environment. Your materials can be in a controlled environment as well. So it has the potential to be able to produce housing of the same quality as site built, but yet in a faster and in with reduced cost, because modular has the opportunity to or factory built to sort of simplify the production process. In that, you can set up a standard design. So, and I kind of relate it to like a condo or apartment where you have all the units are very similar. They can look different on the outside with just some different finishes, but they can be manufactured very efficiently this way, and that helps bring costs down and increase production. I went to 12 Neighbors in Fredericton, so that's a tiny home community in Nova Scotia, or yeah, New in Fredericton, New Brunswick, and they're actually manufacturing their own homes. These are small homes for their community. I think they're expected to hit 99 this year, which is their target for tiny homes in the community. And they're producing one home a week. So that's with a crew of seven. They're able to put out one complete home finished per week, which means, that's 52 homes out produced in a year out of their production facility. So, that's really exciting because first of all, it's a small footprint, which means they can be completed in a short period of time. But the fact that they can actually put it out and have somebody new living in a home every week is really exciting because you can't do that in any traditional build.
This is very good news, and I hope this will roll out across Canada in different provinces and different cities, so we can have a redundancy of suppliers. We have so multiple sources to be able to increase the input, so and then we can increase the output by as the result of it. Because right now, I heard that sometimes when people are looking to get the modular homes, there is a long wait list. in some
Yes.
places, especially in Ontario. They have to pre-order, wait almost a year or so just to get theirs done, and then go through the other steps as well. Do you think that we are closer to reality, that we will witness these kind of instant manufacturing almost within a week more often across Canada, or is it some timeline before it happens?
Well, I know that a lot of the modular companies are really gearing up, and there's some new companies in the industry that are bringing new technologies to try and address that. But I think a factory can only put out so many homes at a time or any on any timeline. Honestly, what I've thought is what we really need is we need multiple factories to be able to meet demand. I mean, the Ontario government and CMHC has projected we need one point, I think CMHC may have brought it down to 1.45 million homes by 2030. So if you look at that between now and 2030, there's not a whole lot. That's only 6 years. So if you take 6 years, and even if a factory can now this is, I should clarify, because I actually had put in one of my blog posts an apology, because I had thought that 1.5 million homes was what was needed, and we were building X number of homes per year, so that was helping address that. But I actually found out that the 1.5 or 1.45 million homes is needed in addition to our current manufacturing or building of homes being sustained at, I think, the 2022 level. So even if 2022, which was a great year for building, if that volume of new housing was sustained till 2030, we're still arriving there 1.5 million homes short. And then, so when you look at that and you say, well, if you look at the numbers of who it is that needs housing, 67% of the people fit the tiny home demographic. So that's singles, couples, single parent or young families, seniors that are empty nesters, 67% of the housing need fits that. So that means 67% of the people of that 1.45 million people could live in a tiny home. So that's a million homes. So that's still a million homes in 6 years. Like, we just don't have any way of addressing that.
No, no, we don't. We don't.
So what we're doing is we're this fall and winter we're going to test a pop-up factory model. So this is basically a factory that we can plan to move into a location where we have approval, and we're working with a municipality to or a city or town to build a community. We'll move the factory in, and within 2 weeks of it arriving, we'll be able to begin manufacturing tiny homes there. And so this will allow us to train a workforce to our building the way we're building the homes, and we'll be able to set up for a factory if the location is large enough to warrant a factory to produce locally. And the idea is that if we can get a factory in, a pop-up factory in, begin producing, then once we have permanent manufacturing there, that pop-up factory can move to the next location and do the same thing there. Because that's the only way I can see that we have any chance of really addressing a portion of that million people.
Yes, definitely. So, in addition to based on your research and your conversation and meetings in at different levels of stakeholders and involved in the process, in addition to the supply problem, what is the number one bottleneck and that you will address, and also what is your proposal to fix it?
Well, biggest thing, well, for us has been, or now it would be, financing. I reached out to every municipality in Ontario this year, beginning of the year, and said, hey, we had done a proposal for Huntsville, And I said to everybody, listen, here's our proposal for Huntsville. We can do something like this for you. And I said, do you have surplus land that we could partner to develop affordable housing on? So out of that, I did about 150 Zoom meetings this year. That got narrowed down to about 40 locations that said, yes, we're really interested and we think we have some property. And then out of that, we're down to 24 now that have said, yes, we have this piece of property. So they have identified property that they own that we could develop. So we're able to address or at least in these locations, address the land issue. We've downloaded the rezoning to the city or town as their responsibility in this partnership arrangement. So our next issue is funding. So we're a nonprofit, and that allows us to access some things easier than for profit, but then it also makes it more difficult for us because we're trying to do this without bringing in investment that's looking for sort of traditional housing returns, right, on their investment money. So we're working to have some social funding as well through community bonds is something we're working now with a new organization, Tapestry, to help us raise some community bonds. And we have some other funding initiatives that we're doing outside of the working with the government. And we're also I was at a housing symposium a couple weeks ago in Leeds and Grenville, and was surprised to find out that Infrastructure Ontario also does some funding of will fund some things along the lines of affordable housing. So we're now exploring that with a couple of the cities and towns that we partnered with to see if we can access funding there. Because really, that's where we're that's our big thing now. I mean, building a community is an expensive endeavor. We're talking quite a bit of money, and traditional financing is, I can't go into a bank and say, hey, loan me 30 million and I want to build this development here. And they say kind of like, well, who are you? What are you doing? What are these tiny what's? So we have to work around that. But mind you, once we established this, I mean, we're talking with CMHC about applying for funding for some of the northern developments. They're interested in it. And there's lots of other things. So that's the next thing we're tackling.
And then financing, sustaining that financial responsibility, whether as a corporation, nonprofit, or as an individual homeowner, future homeowner, is also a challenge for traditional models. That's why, as we see in the current economy, the way things are going, even people who are at some point they thought they can afford their mortgages, and now they are out for a surprise. That it's difficult to sustain the monthly payments the way things are going now, and the cycle will continue. Even if things will become better, then a few years later another cycle comes again. This bottleneck will be there. So there has to be a better financial models that, as you mentioned, that should support it. Now, for some people who may not know the detail of more detail about tiny towns, if you give a quick rundown of what is the model like, and if individuals want to be part of it, like self-finance it. Let's say there is like you have 20 units in one community, or 20 tiny homes in one community, and if 20 people come together to become bring their own financing, would that be something worth, and how would it look like for them?
I could see that being a challenge, especially if they want to do it on their own. Zoning probably is the first challenge you're going to face, because our the oh how can I put this? So our provincial policy, right, determines how the sort of province develops, how it grows.
Yes.
It is was made a number of years ago, and it's really focused on developing the urban centers. Okay, so rather than everybody talks about sprawl, and they want to avoid that. So the focus is on building up in the urban centers. So when like this is a when you want to develop a community in a rural setting, there's obstacles that you're going to be faced with. So that's like the very first thing. There are unincorporated townships. They offer the easiest way to develop a community. Most of those are much north or quite a bit northern, however. So, as long as you don't mind the relocating to a more northern area, that would probably be the easiest road to take. I've talked to a few people that have started communities in that case, in that way. So that's going to be the first challenge is getting approval for multiple units on a property. And then after that, it's not so bad because you can design a tiny home that meets building code, so that's not a real obstacle. You still have to take into account how you're going to deal with the big things are waste and water. How is that going to be handled? Because we're again our planning and zoning people are very used to the traditional way of doing that. So that's septics and wells, right? So when you bring together a number of houses, even tiny houses on a property, the question becomes, well, how are you going to deal with that? Are you going to have one septic system that everybody hooks into, one well that everybody draws water from? And then it's like, okay, well, how is that going to affect everything, right? So how's that going to affect the rest of the water table? Is that going to, if you have a communal waste system, how's that going to affect like, well, first of all, the groundwater, who's going to manage it if in the future? It's a complicated thing. Frontenac Township is really moving ahead on the communal waste and water systems. So it's exciting to see where they're going to head with that because they're basically setting a precedent for how other rural communities could incorporate and support communal systems. So that really opens up, has a potential to open up tiny towns or other small communities that aren't hooked up to services.
In your examples and illustrations that I remember when we saw at Tiny Home Show, I believe you were mentioning the combination of having a rental, affordable rental stock, and also affordable home ownership in your model. Is that something that is still in the plan for the upcoming projects?
Yes, we're shooting for a minimum of 30% of the housing in the development to be affordable rentals. And then that would leave the and then a probably around another 20% maybe as far as rent to own, affordable rent to own housing, and then the balance would be affordable to purchase housing. Now, in our model, we plan that it will be a cooperative community. So even though we say affordable to purchase, it's not like a traditional, go out and buy a house model. You can basically you're buying a share in the cooperative. And that gives you the ability to live in that house as long as you want. Same as if you bought a house. The big difference is in the purchase and the sale. So you can't turn around and say, well, I'm moving to BC, I'm going to sell my house. All you can do is the cooperative will buy in our model, the cooperative will buy your house back from you. They will pay you what you paid for it plus inflation. So we modeled this so that you're not going to appreciate the same as if you bought a traditionally built house, but
Yes.
your equity isn't going to be eroded because of inflation. So the idea is that you can buy the same number of loaves of bread today as you could in the future, assuming the bread follows inflation as well. But that's the idea. And so this way we can keep things affordable for future generations too. We don't want to just, create a fix for today and then 10 years down the road be in this situation again in these homes. We want to try and set up the model so it works in the future as well. So, our rentals are planned to be affordable by two people making, well, one person making above or two people making minimum wage. And same thing for our purchase model, that you could carry it, two people making just above minimum wage would be able to afford a tiny home in the community. And our target is that they're not spending more than 30% of their income.
Yeah, that will be amazing. I mean, we mentioned about rural areas and the communities and the municipalities that have offered access to surplus land that they have. But in the context of more closer to major urban centers, and because some people, I know that affordability is very important, but at the same time, commuting to place of work and employment and other things there, what is the chance and possibility to have tiny towns within, let's say, proximity of an hour to major cities. That still will be a commute, but it still is almost doable for a lot of people. But then they can still have a way to pay much less in owning, but maybe still be comparing to a rural area. I'm sure it's higher cost, but is it possible? Is it doable based on your research so far?
Oh, definitely. When I started, I looked at all the, cities and towns in Ontario and, or actually even Canada, and figured that, there is land available within, like you say, an hour or less commute of each center. The challenge is just getting the model designed, built so that people can, pardon me. So that people can see it. I mean, that's the biggest challenge here is, have these nice pictures we make and design ideas and in my mind, I see people living in these developments, right? It's not, I see them as flourishing. But the thing is, I've been eating, breathing, sleeping it for 5 years now. And other people haven't. And what we need is really to be able to show people how the some first showcase communities built, so we can bring those decision makers to it. Whether it's councils or the people in planning and building departments come see these and see that, hey, these are beautiful s neighborhoods of small houses. And then I really think that we're going to see a lot more interest because, anything like if we look at this as an example, this is one of our proposals for Elliott Lake. So here we're proposing to put, I think it's 80 homes in this piece of property. So this is in town on municipal services. It's just under a 7 acre lot there. And we can basically have this up and running within 2 years of start. And that's really hard for something else to do in a different form of housing. So, I think that once we have this model up and running and we can invite people to it and say, hey, let's build one of these in your neighborhood, within commute of wherever, I really think people are gonna, the decision makers are gonna see the benefit and want it. Add this to the housing stock.
Yes, and we need more support from the decision makers on different levels, because if we wait for the traditional models, it's not gonna, as you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, it's not we cannot keep up with the way things are going and with the way that how behind we are, and also for individuals who whether they are renting or renting rent to own or owning it upfront, we every community will flourish when there's a sense of hope and belonging and sense of stability and more than anything else, other than having a basic shelter, we need to give especially the future generation a sense of hope for the future, a sense of possibilities, right? A sense of that we belong to the future. We don't we, that's not that something is all cut off, or we don't hit a wall. And I believe that that's one of the ways to sustain our social and business resilience going forward, to build values like this in, you know, within our communities, whether it's from the backyard, as you mentioned at the beginning, or within a pocket of the neighborhood, the tiny town homes within the community, or as close as possible to other infrastructures. Because if we don't give hope then to our generation that are coming, we will not be sustaining anything that we have so far.
I think, what a lot of people have not really given a lot of thought to is the fact that we haven't planned a route for people, new people to get into housing, right? There isn't really any more of a staged path into traditional housing. I mean, to go from renting into a 600 or 800 or $1 million home is a big jump,
It
right?
is.
And so we don't have any of that interim housing. So this is what I'm hoping that this will be able to provide. It'll be able to be a stepping stone into more traditional housing, both stepping stone into and out of, because that's another thing that we lack so much of is I've talked to so many municipalities and they say, our seniors have nowhere to downsize into. So
Yes.
that has real implications because if seniors, one or two, are living in their family home because they don't have any other option, they're also keeping that family home off the market where a family could move into. So,
Yes.
by we need this, we need something like this, and I don't say this is the only solution, but I think it's a good help for the solution. Is this can be a place people can move into traditional housing, and then when their family is back down to one or two people, they can move out of this and free up that family home. So basically, address the whole housing needs in by just building more of these.
Yes, and your vision and the way you're looking at it is makes it more sustainable, and not necessarily for only for environmental or material, but in also functionally and practically for different generations and different stages of our life to have a circle of sustainability in, like you said, how things. For example, the aging in place for seniors, right? Or they are forced to age in place in their big home now, where they say they can't find a smaller place to downsize. And then also, if we have the smaller place downside, we don't need to have a lot of pressure on senior home communities, right? In terms of like senior living or assisted living, that because if these communities are interconnected and they are small pocket, there will be a sense of support and connection, like a small village, like a tiny village, right?
Yes.
A tiny town and tiny village. And then we will less pressure on the infrastructure, as we saw how difficult the impact of COVID was in on our seniors, where they were the one the most affected by the disaster of pandemic. And this
Yes.
will offset future challenges that might happen. It will make the communities more resilient if they make this more possible, whether they are small towns or neighborhoods, communities, or big urban centers. We hope that as we continue these conversations in the future, we will hear more positive, good news of support and progress and actual examples taken in place, so that more communities, more municipalities will take take the initiative to replicate these concepts, because the more we do, the more we need this. It's not that we only do a couple neighborhoods and you're done with this concept.
Yes, this is what I why I'm so interested in sharing everything that we develop and we find, is because the only way we have a chance of addressing some of this is if there are many people working together. So, yes.
Yeah, and we are happy to have you with us in this conversation. We're looking forward to have you in Canadian Business Owner magazine and the Business of Real Estate section to feature you and to have more insights and updates about the progress of Tiny Towns Associations in the future as well. We will continue these conversations and let's work together. And we invite all the listeners and audience who are watching, listening to this conversation or reading through the magazine afterward to be part of this and support these initiatives that make things sustainable for all of us. Instead of we want to make the world a better place for all of us and our world, our neighborhood, start with one tiny town at a time.
One tiny town at a time. That's right.
Yeah,
Thanks for
very
sharing.
nice talking to you. We will continue the conversation in the future. Thank you.